Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. ArchiCAD is the official BIM software of the Entree Architect community. ArchiCAD BIM software enables design, collaboration, visualization, and project delivery no matter the project size or complexity. With flexible licensing options and a dedicated support team to guide us along the way, ArchiCAD is an ideal choice for firms and projects of any size. I encourage you to reach out and talk to the folks at Graphisoft by visiting our own dedicated webpage at graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. There's even an exclusive special offer waiting for our Entree Architect community. Go now to graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioned to help make your architecture firm a success. That's graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Gloria Cloder, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks so much, Mark. I'm so excited and I'm so honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. This is a long time coming. You and I have been talking through the internet for a long time. You've been featured on the blog about your book, and you've been on Context and Clarity with Jeff Eccles and Catherine McPhail. But I wanted you to be here on the podcast because I want to talk about The Architecture of Motherhood, your book. And I want to talk about the subject of architecture of motherhood and how professionals and parents, mothers specifically, but parents too, right? Any caregivers can balance that, right? Can balance the two things. I always call it the firm and the family. How do you balance the firm and the family? How do you make that work? And so you wrote a book about it. So I'd love to have that conversation and learn from you. Before we do that, I want to introduce you and then ask your origin story. And so let's let people know who you are. Gloria Cloder is an award-winning architect, founder and CEO of Glow Architects, a keynote speaker, and best-selling author. In her book, The Architecture of Motherhood, Gloria shares her incredible journey to becoming a worldwide renowned architect and business owner while being a new mom. Through this book, the reader can learn how women in any industry can find a balance between their professional life and motherhood without having to compromise either role. Gloria is also the co-author of the best-selling book, City Shapers, Stories of Immigrant Designers, a compilation of the journey of 24 successful professionals from all over the world, and actually some of them whom are members of the Entree Architect community are in that book. They're all making a positive impact and paving the way in the United States as architects and leaders in our industry. Gloria has been featured here on the blog, like I mentioned, and on Context and Clarity with Jeff Eccles and Catherine McPhail. Gloria, finally, it's great to have you here on the podcast. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much. I am excited.
All right. Let's learn your origin story. I'd love for you to go back as far as you want to go back and share when you discovered your passion for architecture and maybe what inspired you to become an architect. Who or what inspired you?
All right. So I was born in the Dominican Republic, Santo Domingo specifically. I was born and raised there. And I really wasn't one of those kids that always knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. I really didn't have a direct influence on anybody in my family to be an architect. I had an uncle who studied architecture back in the DR, but he immigrated before he finished and he never really kind of got his license here or anything like it. And I never really had a contact with him because he left the country when I was very little. So I didn't even understand what he was doing as a career path or whatever. Like I had no influence from him at all, really. So I grew up just kind of like living each day at a time, I would say. My parents got divorced when I was 5. So I grew up really pretty much with my mom and my sister, my older sister. And we have a lot of limitations financially due to that divorce. And I think when I was little, now that I look back into, things that I was doing when I was little, I feel that I had a lot of signs of me having talent and skills for architecture and interior design, because I remember playing with my dolls and just kind of like creating furniture with like soap bars. Like I will crave them out and create like furniture. And when I think about it, man, that's really a skill for being just a small kid, doing that. But I never really saw it as like, oh, this is what I'm going to be doing for a living or whatever. And my mom did sew a little bit of me like in arts and painting and drawing and poetry and things like that. I was very drawn to that type of art in general, but I just didn't know what I wanted to be. And she bought me this headboard for, it will fit at the back of my bed, and it had a lot of like slots and kind of little spaces, I would say different sizes. And I remember creating spaces for my dolls that represent like, this is the living room and this is the kitchen. Cause we didn't have like the ability for her to like buy me a real dollhouse, like with all the little stuff. So I had to kind of like imagine and create them and kind of like make them with my own hands and in my own efforts in a way. So I think that's kind of the scene I can say when I was very little. But I grew up just, I was really a good student. I actually finished high school when I was 15 years old, which is kind of unique in the DR because the average age is 18. So everybody was at least 2 to 3 years older than me in all of my classes. The reason was because I started school really early and I was really smart. I don't know what happened when I grew up, but but I was really smart when I was little and just very, very dedicated to my studies and all that. And what happened really, how I ended up in architecture, is a funny story. So I had a friend, she was my neighbor, and we were really close at that time. And she started architecture school before me because she was older than me. And I was still in high school when she started college. And I will visit her almost every day because we were like, she was living like in the, like right next to us. And she will come back from school struggling, just struggling so bad with anything related to design. Most of the other classes that are basic that you take, like, that first year about math or philosophy, whatever.
Yeah.
She was doing great, but anything that was related to design itself, like what you guys call here studio, it was just really hard on her. And I remember when she was coming with those assignments and homework, I was always so fascinated by it. And in my head, I was like solving these problems and saying, oh my gosh, you can do this, you can do that. And da, 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 da. And she was always like, oh, this is so stupid. This is so boring. I can't stand it. And this teacher wants me to imagine this concept. Like, what is he talking about? Like, she just didn't like it. And I think she was more of a thinker, but like in the, like not in the art part. Like, she didn't like the art part of it, I guess. So she ended up switching careers at some point, thankfully early in the process, not too late. And she became a really, really well-known, like children's psychiatrist or like a doctor. Yeah. Very well-known right now on it. Or psychologist, I think is the rear term. But I, through her experience, I said, oh, maybe this is something I can do. Let's see how it goes. And it was a hard decision because it's a, I'm imagine it's the same here, but in the DR is a very expensive career to study. Like, your parents really invest a lot of money on models, materials, and all that, and printing plans and whatever. And my mom was always like, are you sure this is what you want to do? This is a very expensive career. But I really wanted to give it a try. So what I did was I started working right away, full-time jobs, not like part-time or like internship or whatever. Like, I was, it was really hard because I had to work at the same time. So while my cool students and friends were taking 6-7 classes, this many credits at a time, I usually was taking half of that. I couldn't handle more having a full-time job. But the good thing was one of my first jobs I got, it was not the first, but one of the first ones I got was actually in an architectural firm. And I started in that one, and I stayed there like about 8 years until I finished everything. And then I did my master's and all that. And, when I came out of school, I had already so much experience in the real world, which I feel that some of my friends didn't have that advantage, because it's not as here in the DR that is very common that in summer students are really encouraged to take, summer classes, but like take internships to get experience. It's not really a scene in VR, you know. Some people actually rather just like study and finish and be done, and then kind of going on the field and whatever.
How did you make the connection to get that internship?
So that's a funny story. So what happened was there was a class where the teacher will ask for us to report an amount of hours to pass the class of experience in a construction site. And I did this when I was taking the class. I found, you know, they recommended several people they knew that we could call. And it was just a way to give us a small little internship for the class only. I remember it was like a amount of like 20 hours, or it wasn't that much. But I was really fascinated by the field part. So I stayed a little longer when I completed my hours, asking the main GC to kind of, you know, I just kind of want to be around whenever it's possible. And I was just kind of learning and all that. And then my friend was taking that same class with that same teacher the semester after. So I tried to call the GC and say, hey, do you still have that job going on? I have this other friend that needs to complete those hours too. Will you give her a chance? And he said, well, no, that's done. And I'm also not being able to deal right now because I just got a really high position in this ministry of what will be housing here. It's a Instituto Nacional de la Vivienda. It's kind of like, you kind of build, it's like a residential projects, but like kind of like big scale urban projects and all.
Is
that
it
kind of
private stuff. or the government?
It's kind of like a mix of both. It's related with the, it is involved heavily with government, but it's kind of private at the same time, so it's kind of like a mix. And he got that position, and then he said, but hey, we're looking for, you know, young young people to work. Like, do you want to like submit your resume? And I said, oh, yeah. And I had a job at that moment with another architect, but it was like more like an art gallery and stuff. And this was a great opportunity because it was in a real, you know, architecture office. And I got the job. I got the interviews and went through the whole process, and I got the job, and that was my job for 8 years. And it's just so funny that I just fell for something else, and then, you know, I got that opportunity, but it changed my life. Those people became my best friends. Like, they went to my wedding. Like, it was just a really great relationship. When I left the office, because I was decided to start my company back there, I, you know, it was kind of hard, like this bittersweet, like, oh, I love you guys, yeah, but I need to move on. And, but that's how I got that job. And it just, man, like because they were integrated. They had a full separate department of engineering, which they had NEP, structural, everything. And I remember I could, even with assignments from school, and when I was working on my thesis, I was able to just walk to that department and say, sitting with the structural guy and say, I don't know how to solve this. Like, how, like, where is, like, where can I find information about this? Like, can you help me out? And it was great. It was like my other little school. So, by the time I graduated, I already had so much experience on my plate that it's insane to think about it.
And when did you start your, because you started your own practice in Dominican Republic, right?
Yes. I started it a little bit parallel with when I was still in this job. And what happened was I got the opportunity to do certain type of projects. And I talked with my boss at the moment and I said, hey, I was up for these. Can we take on it? And they were like, no, like, you can do that in your own time, but we just can't do it, because they were focused on this specific type of project. So they let me just do my scene. The problem was I got to a point where I was getting really busy with scenes on my side, and I realized I was making more money, way more money going on my own. And I felt confident enough. I feel like I didn't really, you know, I didn't need to wait, because I was handling really big projects already in my current job. I feel really confident, and I had a really great network of people. I was not liability in the DR is just a little bit less on how since work here, it's easier to work around and to talk to people when any, you know, these disputes come up. And I feel that I was least fearful of anything going wrong, because I always feel like, well, but I know all these engineers, I know all these GCs, I know all these other architects, I know people, like, and I had a lot of experience on the field too, on how things are built and done back in the DR. So I felt confident, like, if I needed somebody to come and install a flooring, I knew the guys to call. And, you know, like, it was good for me. So I started pretty much 2009. And I left that job 2011. So I was kind of parallel for 2 years. And then 2011 is when I like took off and stopped working with them.
So it sounds like you built a pretty successful business in the DR. What happened? How did you end up coming to the United States and starting all over?
So I would like to talk a little bit of the success in the DR. So what happened was, And the reason was hard coming here in that matter, was because I was really building up my name, my brand, my, you know, my company. And again, everything just happened kind of like a chance, it was like a God scene, because around 2010, right in the middle of those 2 years, I got an offer of building, not designing, building, kind of being the GC for this tenant improvement job, which was the first Steve Madden retail store in a big, big mall that was
opened. Steve Madden?
Steve Madden, yeah.
And it was clothing and shoes?
The shoes designer, yes. Yeah. And it was the first time they were coming to the DR. It was a big deal. And this mall was new. There was a lot of other stores being built at the same time. And they already had the design from someone from, I believe it was an architect from Venezuela, the sender design. And we were only going to do renders for them so they could see it and build it. And we had a deadline, pretty strict, strict deadline for it, because they will be penalized per day that they were late. So it was very important to be on time. And then we made the renders based on the design they sent. And then they were like, oh my gosh, this is not what we were thinking. Like, we don't like this. And I was like, okay, what do we do? I
mean, yeah, because now you have a deadline.
We were 2 weeks out of having to literally break, like, start. And they were like, can you give us something else in 2 weeks? And I'm like, what? And we negotiated a price and they said yes. And I didn't sleep for 2 weeks because I was, you know, I was ambitious, and I thought it was a great opportunity. I was saying, oh my gosh, I can do the first Steve Madden in the DR and say it was my design. And I jump into it with open arms, and I had to take days off from my job because I couldn't be doing it part-time. I really needed to do like full-time on this. Again, was one of those signs of like, okay, Gloria, maybe you need to just step out of this and just focus on that. And I got it. I got the design based on a concept that we talked. I had one meeting with the clients, and they told me what they like and what they were looking and what was the target audience. And they, when I presented my renders and my floor plans and elevations, they were like, oh, this is great. This is what we want. And we were kind of parallel getting the premise with the committee that needed to approve the design. But we were able to start building while doing that process. It was kind of like a fast tracking process. And we were done on time. They were not penalized. We opened on time. And that one store got featured in a big architectural journal magazine. It's they are like the biggest architectural, like if you want to know anything, they are like the ones. They're called Architexto. And they called me and said, we want to feature your store. And it got featured on it. And that just skyrocketed my career from that. Like, I got so many other retail stores in that mall and other malls. And just like a lot of people just calling and saying, hey, I got so-and-so told me about you, and can you work with us? And then I, you know, I just thought I was, you know, just on track of kind of like getting all my dreams, professional
yeah,
career.
It sounded like it was the
yeah.
perfect setup.
No, I was just young and, you know, energetic and all that. And then, and I was on my own, and I was at the same time, I got an offer of teaching in this art school that is very well known to in the DR called Chabon. So I was doing that besides my normal business, teaching architectural design, drafting, those two classes. And then I met Jeremy. That was the problem.
Uh-huh.
Jeremy Clutter. It's funny because I actually mentioned this in part of my book. Is 2009. I didn't even have a tourist visa to travel to the United States. I did got one after, and I came a couple of times for vacations after that, but in 2019 I didn't have one. And I was still like, I was about to finish school because I graduated that year, and I went to someone's house to look for these books, and his aunt came out and started talking to me about, like, she had a vision for me. It's just, it's funny because I didn't believe in any of it. Like, I was not, it's just a weird story, but she came like, I have this word for it. I'm talking 2009, right? No visa, no nothing, just a student girl. And she says, oh, I see you getting married with this guy. His skin is really white and he's tall and he's wearing a military uniform, is what she said. I'm like, I don't know any military guy. What are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, and I see you traveling.
So she's seeing your future.
Yeah, she's telling me this stuff. And I'm like, this is so stupid. Like, what are you talking about?
In 2009.
Yeah, 2009. And she told me something about traveling. And I'm like, I don't even have a visa. Like, it's just like, yeah.
You're crazy. This is
not. Yeah, you're crazy. And I left the house just kind of laughing. Like, whatever. And I forgot about it. Oh, and then she said, this is the funny part. She said, yeah, you're going to have a girl with him. You're going to marry and have a girl with him. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. So that was that. And, you know, I graduated in my career and I forgot, like, I wasn't really a great friend of this person. I just went for these books and like, I never heard of her ever. I forgot, completely forgot about
it. Yeah.
So fast forward 2013, I meet Jeremy, and Jeremy ended up being a Marine of the United States. He's tall and white. I know that, but I still, I mean, 2013, I met him and I still didn't think of this lady at all.
Right.
Like, it was not in my mind. I didn't remember nothing. And
how did you meet Jeremy?
It was in a club.
in the DR.
In the Dominican Republic. He was stationed in the U.S. Embassy in Haiti. And first time he came to the DR to visit. We met because we have a friend that came from New York. He was getting engaged around that time. And we were like celebrating him and all that. And we went out, a big group of like almost 20 people. And Norman is his name. I always said he's the godfather of our relationship because usually Dominicans are pretty jealous with their friends. They don't like strangers coming into the group when you're out, you know. But he was all about love because he was just getting engaged and whatever. And I was coming out of the bathroom and Norman was waiting for the group in the hallway. And Jeremy was waiting for his other Marine friend in the hallway. And Jeremy looked at me like, whoa. And Norman said, well, she's single, you know, if you want to stay with us, we have this little VIP
a
area.
Matchmaker.
Yeah. And Jeremy's friend was about to leave, which is really the one who was familiar with the DR. And he's like, you don't know Spanish. You don't know these people. You're not staying. Are you crazy? And he's like, I'm a Marine. What are you talking about? I'm not afraid of blah, blah, blah. So he ended up staying and we got to like, you know, kind of start talking after that. And not too long after, he came back and we kind of kept talking and talking. And a couple of months after, he invited me to meet his family here. And that's when I knew it was serious. And we just, you know, we just kind of knew and we got married 2015 and we're still here. Just,
wow.
Yeah. And the funny part is, you know, I came in 2015 and we delayed having kids because I really wanted to get the license and all that, which we probably will touch base on that part. But one part I want to say it is when I got pregnant, finally in 2019, I was talking with a good friend from DR. Her name is Margaret. And Margaret said, oh my gosh, Gloria, can you imagine if you have a girl, maybe that lady had something. And that's when I remember.
You're like, what lady? What are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about this lady. And it's like, I don't know if you've seen my wedding pictures, but he got married with the military.
Yeah.
Like the blues, the Marine blues and all that.
I've seen you post them.
That is just so crazy that it actually happened. So when we had the gender reveal and the whole pink smoke of like color came out, I was like, gosh, I should go back to the lady and apologize because I just really thought she was like a wacko or something, but she really was onto something. So that's my story with Jeremy.
That's amazing. Yeah. So 2015, you get married, you move to the United States, and is it easy to sort of just transfer all your credentials over to the United States and start practicing?
No. I think that was the hardest part, not only doing it, but even understanding how to do it. And this is one of the reasons I've become so passionate on helping immigrants and foreign architects, because I went through so much because it just felt that nobody around me knew anything about it. And this is the main problem that a lot of people face, is they come to the States and their people, their family and friends are not in the architectural industry and they don't know how to help them. So a lot of people I know even give up for years on their career because everybody around them don't know anything. And they try to call places or they go to their own institution on, you know, to kind of find out like, oh, if I want to practice or this or that. And a lot of people don't realize that they can call themselves architects. So they go to try to approach companies and say, hey, I'm an architect from here and I want to apply to this architect job.
Right.
And then the companies are like, well, you're not an architect. I can't hire you for that. And like, it doesn't register to them. Like, what are you talking about? I am an architect, but you know, but I'm not. So 2015, to me, it was really hard to understand that. And I thought when me and Jeremy decided to get married, the plan was I was going to just transfer my business, which was very successful in the DR. And I said, why I wouldn't just continue back in, you know, I can open a business there. And again, I wasn't afraid because I didn't know as much. I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't understand the liability here, how things work. And in my head, I was just going to open the business while he will transfer his career because he didn't want to be in the Marines anymore. He was ready to step out and retired on that and just kind of like started a business in real estate is what he wanted to do. So I said, I got you, babe. I'm going to do my business. And when you are, you know, when you're set up, then you just kind of go from there. And then I came here and a reality check just hit me so bad because it was so many things. Like first I came and I had a tourist visa, so I couldn't work until the real, what they call green card or resident visa was issued, which took about eight to 10 months to come out.
Wow.
So I couldn't work. I had the right to be here vacationing, but not right. working. So I made zero money all that time. We were just using our savings. And he was changing careers. Just imagine a new realtor who has been out of the country for years, has no connections anymore because all of his friends were Marines who were overseas. And man, I think in between those months, he sold like maybe one house or two and that was it. And it was just really hard. And the process of the paperwork and all that was just so expensive. And anyhow, finally, I got my green card. I start working right away it was like a home developer, gave me the chance to start working with them. And I realized pretty quickly that was not the place for me to be because they didn't have an architect in house. And when I realized I start learning of the process of getting my license is when I understood like I needed to be under a licensed architect here because I had this specific requirement of hours under them and all that.
So did you have to start all over again as if you were the same as a student coming out of university?
Almost. There was a mistake I made in the process, which was there is this foreign architect path that is available now. It hasn't been forever. It's kind of a newer scene. Yeah. It has been for a couple of years now, but it's not something that was there 10 years ago, is what I'm trying to say. But when I came to the States, it was just starting. And I didn't understand that in that NCARP record tab where it says registrations, what they meant was my license. So I never really put information about it there because I didn't understand what registration means. It's like, oh, you're registering for something. Like I didn't understand right. what that was. And I was starting the process as the standard path of like evaluating all my education and da 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 da.
So you started from the beginning, but you didn't necessarily have to because you misunderstood the process.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've learned too is this foreign architect pass is not accepted by every single state in the United States, but like most of the states do accept it. It's only like about five that has certain extra requirements or whatever. But when I was talking with someone in NCARP on the phone and I mentioned, yeah, because I have my license in VR, they were like, oh, have you thought of applying to the foreign architect path? And I was already so deep into the other path. Like I completely have the ease evaluation done. The one thing with the foreign architect path was that I was so deep into the standard path. And I paid for the whole ease evaluation and the results came back and I needed to take classes. I came with a deficiency of 6 credits. 3 was for English, 3 for codes and regulations. And the codes and regulations I needed to take in a specific, non-specific college, but it needed to be like master's degree so they could accept my master's too, not just my bachelor's, which is something I wanted. And it was a lot of money. Like just the class was like $3,000 and you needed to take the full semester or whatever. And then time, you know, you keep thinking of time too.
Right.
Time is money. And, you know, going back to school for that, it was just kind of hard on me. And just translating all the documentation, Mark, like the cheapest quote I got for translating the paperwork was like $10,000. Because the book was huge, it was like 400 something pages. And people don't understand that. Like, you're just an immigrant that came a year or two ago, and it's not easy to have $10,000 from nowhere when you're like struggling to even get a job. So then, you know, NCAR people tell me about the foreign architect path, and I applied to it. I put my credentials from the DR, my license number, my license number, and then everything changed. I didn't have to go through the ESA. It was not required with this pass. The other thing was that they will assess my experience from the DR differently too, because when you report hours that are older than 6 to 8 months, they kind of cut those in half. And when you're in the foreign architect path, because they're considered a foreign architect, not a foreign emerging professional, they accepted 100%. So my hours were cut half, but when I passed to this new, changed to this new path, then they were 100. So it really saved me time and money, because I didn't have to go to school. I didn't have to do all these extra hours, et cetera, et cetera. So long story short, I did the path and suddenly everything was approved and they were like, okay, you're ready to take the exams, take the AREs. And I wasn't prepared. I was thinking the AREs were going to come like a year from there or two, because I needed to complete the AXP and all that. And I wasn't prepared. I started talking with people around me, trying to find out information of how to study for the AREs. Again, nobody knew anything. The most I got was somebody telling me to study ballast, and that's what I did. And I took the first exam. I started in the 4.0 system.
Yep.
And I think I took CDS first, and somehow I passed it on the first try. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is not that hard. Even so, I got out of the exam kind of thinking like, oh my gosh, what was that? Like, I was so confused after the exam, and I still managed to pass it. And I think it was the worst thing that actually happened to me, because I think I got overconfident.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, it was hard, but I still passed it. So how hard can the other ones be, you know? And then I took the second exam, which was PPP, and I failed. And then I took the third exam, which was SPD, still in 4.0, and I failed. And I went back to PPP, and I studied so hard. And I failed again. And it's three exams fail, or three attempts of failing, and then failing. And just like, I just didn't know. I felt like I was in this wheel. Like I'm just studying the same. And then I got, and I see questions that I don't know where these questions are coming from. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I found Michael Risica, which we all know.
Young architect.com.
Yes. And he was my savior in this process. Oh my gosh. I owe so much to him. I remember I called him, or I text him on, I think it was on Instagram, and he's like, I'm about to take this flight, but just call me real quick before we fly out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And I talked with him for like 10 minutes. He gave me a lot of information about the ARE bootcamp, and I was completely sold. And I started the ARE bootcamp with Young Architect, and it really gave me a lot of a structure and just so much help on how to study for these exams. And that's what really get me through the finish line. It was that group, because I just met so many wonderful people. The system inside of just having other people, it really increased my network. It helped me to meet others that were in the same situation that I was. And it really helped me understand better, because I wasn't limited to my family and friends anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's so you have people now who understand what you're going through and help and know ways to get through those processes. Mike has built a fantastic community over there, just, you know, beyond the training and the support, but the community, even after people have passed the AREs, stick around and thriving community. Mike has done a great job.
Yeah, and everybody is so supportive and positive inside of the community too, which is very important.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. There's a lot to love about being an entrepreneur architect, right? But trying to figure out our financials on our own is not one of those things. Luckily, we have FreshBooks, the all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like us. FreshBooks takes all the not-so-fun parts of running a business, from building and tracking invoices, to managing online payments, to organizing expenses, and automates them with features like the digital bills and receipt scanner, saving you up to 11 hours a week in the process. It's also super easy to get up and running, and the award-winning FreshBooks support team, they are always available to answer any questions along the way. Compare that to some of the other financial management tools out there. Try FreshBooks for free for 30 days, no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/architect to get started today. That's freshbooks.com/architect. So what will you do with 11 more hours each week? This episode is brought to you by RCAT.com. We all have that one story, that one project that had such a unique situation that it required a solution that you had rarely considered before. We share these stories in private professional circles with our friends and our colleagues, but there has never been a collection of these stories of conflict and triumph all in one place until now. Detailed is a podcast series that features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who share their insights and expertise as they highlight some of the most complex, interesting, and oddball building conditions that they have ever encountered, and the ingenuity it took to solve them. Join host Charisse Lakeside, aka CSI Kraken, a senior specifications writer at RDH Building Science, as she uncovers lessons learned to help you navigate similar challenges that may arise in your next project. Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. Listen and subscribe right now at rcat.com/podcast. That's rcat.com/podcast, RCAT.com/podcast. Detailed, every building has a story. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So you get your license. How did you start your practice right away once you have the license?
So when I left that job in 2016 with the builder, I got a job in an architectural firm in 2016, and I was with them until 2020. I got my license in 2019, so 1 year before that. And I was comfortable. They were good to work with. They did a lot of healthcare and assisted living facilities. And I just learned a lot from them because that was a different type of project of what I was used to even back in the DR. And but 2019 is when I got pregnant. And then early 2020, COVID hit. And everything was locked down and, you know, you were working from home and all that. And when I delivered my baby in June, you know, and I was in the process of getting ready for, you know, the maternity leave and all that, I was trying to negotiate with them coming back somehow, still virtual or like half-time virtual or something, because with the whole pandemic situation, all of our plans changed. We were not able to get Nova in a daycare like we were thinking. And it was just kind of hard to figure out what to do, you know. And they said no. They wanted me to go back full time because there were certain situations happening inside of the company that they just kind of needed me there in person since we're back to open at that point and all that. And it just wouldn't work for me because we didn't have a like an option, a good option, at least at the time with Nova. And Jeremy was the one who sat with me and said, you know, maybe this is the last push you need. Like you have your license already. You've been working for 4 years. And all things are different here. You know, there's a lot of more liability and sense to understand when you're opening a business. But would you consider that so you can manage your time and, you know? And I kind of thought about it a lot because it was scary because he had his own business. So I was like the stable income and you know, and he was an entrepreneur. But his business at this point was just really doing so well. Like a lot of things changed between those years because Jeremy switched from just being a realtor agent to being a broker. And he started a brokerage. And then from that brokerage, he started another business that is under the same umbrella, that is a property management. And then with the partners that he has with these two businesses, he started a fund where he investors put money. And there's just a lot of different type of businesses working at the same time. And he was, you know, being very successful on it. Like he has, the brokerage alone is over 100 agents. I don't know where they are right now. The property management, he's managing about like 300, 400 doors. It's just crazy how much the business has grown. And he was like, you know, I know it's nice having the nice insurance and the, you know, from the big company and the stability, but, you know, maybe we can pull this off. And one of the things was, I remember there was a Young Architect conference back in 2019 that we both attend. And one of the presentations, I actually spoke on that one. I made a speaking presentation for it. But one of the presentations that someone else did was saying, what is when you're trying to take a risk, when you're trying to do something new that you're afraid of, and like, how do you approach that? And she said, one of the things she does is she kind of asks herself, like, what is the worst? What is the worst that can happen? And if that happens, how would you handle it? And if you can handle it, if you have a plan for the worst scenario, then it's okay. Like you can do this. And when he asked me this based on that conference, right? Because we just went there. It was 2019 and we're talking about around June or so of 2020, a little bit after June. He says, well, what is the worst that can happen? And I said, well, you know, that it doesn't work. And then I feel like so humiliated and then I have to get another job back. And he's like, well, and how bad it is just having to go back to a job? It's like, you've been doing it for 4 years and it wasn't that bad. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess. So that was it. I was like, okay, if the worst that can happen is that I have to just go back and get a job, then it's fine. I know now that that's not the worst that can happen. I can get sued and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think I wasn't really thinking of that. I was more thinking of the failure part, you know, of not being able to pull it off and kind of make it work. And I am very thankful that the business has been actually pretty successful on my terms. And what I was expecting is where we are at and it's growing and it's just, it hasn't stopped. As soon as I told people, I have a friend that told me, you know, when you, she started her business too, but she's an interior designer. And she said, you know, when you start a business here, at least in Tampa, she said, just be ready to tell people that you're going to be on your own and be prepared for them to throw business at you because there's so much going on here. It's so much that people are throwing business away because of how much is happening in the market. And she said, just be mentally ready for that. When you tell people you are going on your own, they're going to send business to you. And that's exactly what happened. Like, I mean, now that I'm pregnant again, I've been like turning away businesses because I just can't, you know. I just I just can't take in everything, and I'm kind of getting ready for delivering in December. And, you know, I just need to slow down and kind of have a way to manage the workload that we have with the team that we have without me getting overstressed.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did the first baby come?
She was born in June 15 of 2020. That was Nova.
And that was after you started the new firm?
No.
Before.
I started the new firm about 3 to 4 months after she was born.
Okay.
Because when we were trying to negotiate the maternity leave, during the maternity leave,
right,
to come back part-time, they said no. And that's when I was like, okay, well, I just need to make what's best for my family and me. And
so what was the inspiration for the book?
So, several things. As I told you, I delayed having kids for a long time, especially because I wanted to get the license first. And I thought, oh, there's no way I can pull this off. While having kids, I need to kind of do it first. It's gonna slow me down. I was very ambitious. And I was just so afraid of not being able to be a successful architect, because I felt I was a successful architect in the DR. And I wanted to be a successful architect here or whatever I am. This is something that, even so, I didn't have architecture as my career option when I was little. When I discovered, I became very passionate about it. I did have a lot of passion, hidden passion that I didn't know of inside of me. And this became my life in a way for so many years. It was hard for me to resign to it. Even when I came to the States, one of the hardest things that I experienced was not being able to present myself as, hi, I'm Gloria Clutter, I am an architect. The thought of me not being able to say I am an architect hurt my ego so bad.
Yeah.
And it just, like, you have to think about of, this might happen to a lot of people, but it had a very deep meaning to me, calling myself an architect. Because if you think about it, my situation, this is something I work very hard for. We all work very hard for it. This is not an easy career in no meaning for anybody. But in my particular case, I had to work since the beginning to pay for it. I had to work really hard to get where I was. And coming to a different country because I fell in love, and then not being able to call myself an architect and maybe having to just do another type of job, it just didn't feel like an option to me. Like, I just couldn't, like, no. And then, you know, I realized in the process of, you know, when I finally got the license and I finally said, okay, we're ready to start having kids in 2019, that when I got pregnant and then when I had the baby, and when, you know, when I started the business, and then I was like, okay, what I'm going to do now? Because it was before the studying and all that. And now it's building a business. Building a business alone is very demanding. It's having a child alone. It's like, right, this brainchild that you're trying to build up. And it takes a lot of time and effort from you. And I felt, oh my gosh, like I feel that if I would have known some of the things I learned in my process, especially that first year or two, I will have started having kids earlier. And there's a lot of things that I experienced as, because I'm over 35 years old, that I could have avoided if I would have started kids earlier, if I would have understand some of the tools that now I know that I was so afraid of before. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, if I would have just known this before, maybe things would have been a little bit different. Maybe I will have found a way to balance this before,
right,
instead of delaying.
So you're an advocate of not waiting, that you can do both. Don't wait to do your profession first and then have kids, because it's never going to be a good time.
Yeah.
Right? And all you're doing is waiting, right? And so you're just waiting on the children. So if you're advocating for families to start earlier, not wait, and continue pursuing your profession, how do you do that? How do you balance the two and make sure that both of them are successful?
I think the first part that, and I talk about this in my book, is one is realizing that I think the biggest fear most of us experience when thinking about this topic is thinking that you kind of have to do everything on your own. That it's all on you. That it's all on you, and that, you know, you have 24 hours a day, and how are you gonna work 8 hours a day and still have time for your kids and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that you really don't have to do it alone. And that's one of the things that I've become more passionate about with motherhood and architecture, is I keep comparing them, because I feel like if there's something I've learned from architecture itself, is how we are interconnected with others to make it work. We just never ever design a building on our own. It's not real. Like, you always depend on other experts for something, either structural or MEP or civil, or, you know, I know there's a lot of architects that get to do a lot of those trades, especially for residential projects, but, like, you know, maybe not in the design part, but like building it, you have to work with a GC, and you have to work with the officials and the you know, the agents having jurisdiction, and work with them and work with the city and work with the clients and understanding what they want, understand what's in the market, and your reps, understanding pricing and, you know, installation techniques and how you're specifying everything. It's just so much. We don't do it alone. And that same applies with parenthood. I'm not even going to say just motherhood, parenthood. Like, you really need to build up your support system and count on them and understand how you can kind of spread that load to make it work. And that looks very different for everybody. You know, in my case, we were very lucky to have Jeremy's mom, which she used to have a business of pet sitting that just went down with the pandemic, because everybody was at home and nobody was traveling. And she was trying to figure out what to do, because her business was going down, and we were looking for an option of someone helping with Nova. And we said, well, what about if we pay you to watch your granddaughter? And she was like, oh yeah, I can do that.
Bonus.
Yeah. And it worked, because it was hard to get, again, on those days, was just hard to get into a daycare, which is the option that a lot of people take, which there's nothing wrong with it. It just was more economical and more personal. And with everything going on, we just felt like it was better to just have Nova at home on those days, because, you know, daycare kids just get sick in normal times. So it was more scary to have her in a daycare at that time, to kind of making the decision of having her around older kids. But that worked for us. But we have different options. It's not just her, how we make it work. But I feel like building your support system is the first step. Understanding who around you, or what systems, what institutions you can count on to make it work. Starting from there is the first step. Like, okay, who's going to do what? Do you have a couple that supports you? Are you a single parent? Like, do you have family that can intervene? Do you have, you know, again, institutions pay for that care? Are you maybe able to negotiate the timing part? That's something I've been seeing lately a lot, which I don't think it was so much an option years ago, but I think that's one thing that came out from the pandemic, I will say, that a lot of firms have been a little bit more open to be like part-time, you know.
Yes.
Well, part-time.
I think they really need to adjust, because that's the expectation now. A lot of people are demanding that, coming out of the pandemic, that that we have that flexibility and freedom to be able to have that balance. And yeah. And the firms that don't do that are going to suffer, and the firms that do are going to thrive. And so
And it's a reality that I feel, especially mothers, I will say more mothers than fathers in general, suffer, especially in the past. Because when I was, you know, doing research for this book, one of the things I did, I start asking other women architects, like, you know, what was your biggest challenge? In like, what do you feel that was one of the things that maybe slow you down at some point, or, you know, like things that may have affect your career path in at some point, maybe not all the time, but at some point. And a lot of came back with, it was related somehow to motherhood. Because when they got pregnant, and some of them had to either just like step out of the career entirely for a while and then come back, and then they were already kind of behind and kind of, you know, not up to date with whatever, what's going on, and relearning programs and whatever. And some of them had felt like this guiltiness of like, well, I just, you know, stayed all the time at work, and then I wasn't really that much for, like, I missed so much from the kids, because when they were in this one scene, I couldn't step out of work to attend to this one scene. And so those conversations from before me even starting motherhood, and after me with doing research, I realized that the situation before, especially some years ago, was very different, you know, and I'm talking about maybe 10 years ago or something, but things are changing for the better. And I think a lot of people are pushing towards this better balance, yes, between life and your, you know, personal life and professional life. And I think us as parents, this applies to both, need to really take advantage of it, because we get so immersed in our careers that, you know, not only with parenthood alone, just life, just being present for your family and yourself, even if you don't have kids, just spending time with yourself and the things you want to do, and traveling and doing all your stuff is important. So I think that was one of the biggest things, was, you know, understanding that you're not alone and that you need to build up that, like, grow your support system is my first, I will say, statement. You need to grow, yeah, that support system and understand who they are and how you're going to use them, and kind of go from there.
What's the next step? What do we, once you have that support system and you find a firm that has that flexibility, because that's something that makes the whole thing easier, to have a firm that sort of understands that this is something you're trying to achieve. What's the next step?
The next step is, I think I've learned a lot about self-awareness, and I call this leading through self-awareness, because even if you're not, like in my case, a business owner, but if you are, it applies really heavily on you. But even if you're not, just as a parent, you're a leader. And just even if you're not a parent, like most of us, we are all leaders somehow, somewhere, to somebody. And I think the self-awareness part is important, because kind of knowing yourself and understanding where your strengths are and your weaknesses, and identifying those weaknesses, so then you can kind of delegate that to part of that support system that you have. Accordingly, is that, to me, is that key of success. Because when you try to put too much on your plate, on things that you're not good at, you don't enjoy to do, you're just kind of like spending time and effort into something that is making you feel miserable, and that it might take you double the time or triple the time that someone else that actually like doing that will be doing. And this applies in the business, in your career, if you're working for a firm, and in parenthood too. I give examples in my book on both, on, you know, how it was happening on my business and how it was happening in, you know, my motherhood journey. But just simple things like, there's this little quick story about when Nova was really little, she was always a good sleeper, thank goodness. She will sleep long, but she wouldn't fall asleep easily. She will fight it. And she needed help. She needed to be rocked and, you know, just kind of like do the whole scene of like soothing her, so she will fall asleep. And I felt that I was really good at it during the day, those first 3 months where I was like fully focused on her and trying to figure out how to start a business and all that. But at the end of the day, I was so tired. And the hardest part for her to fall asleep was the last time, when she will like sleep from like 10 to 5 a.m. or whatever. And I was destroyed physically and mentally. I was just tired. I couldn't do it. And I feel like I wanted her to fall asleep fast because I needed to rest, and it wasn't working. And the whole self-awareness to me at that point, which is this very simple example, I'm just bringing this up because it's a very simple example. It was me being honest with myself and saying, this is not working. I need help. And I turned to one of my key pieces of my support system, which is my husband. And I said, I need you to be the one putting her down until she falls asleep easier at this time of the day, because it's not working for me. I'm getting impatient. It's draining me out and I'm tired. And he was way more patient than me. His strength was way better in that part than me at that time of the day, because I was taking care of her all day. But he will come, you know, from work and just like, oh, this is my time with my baby. And he will rock her for like 10, 15 minutes if it was needed. But 10, 15 minutes for me was like 3 hours because I was draining, tired. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that simple scene just makes such a big difference, because while he was putting her down, I was able to, okay, let me have some time for me. Let me take a shower. Let me just have dinner and let me, you know, brush my hair. So like whatever it was, it gave me some time for me to rest and to kind of get other stuff done. And instead of me suffering through 15, 20 minutes of trying to put my baby down and feeling like it was just not working. That's just a simple example, but that applies to business too. You know how many things I am awful in my business? I have a small business and we wear many hats, you know this. But I am so bad at, like, you know, admin stuff. I just hate doing all the paperwork. There's so much. If it was for me, I will never get paid because I'm awful at, you know, collecting money, things like that. And there was that part of the business that needed to be handled somehow, which I had to do initially because I didn't have anybody and I was just trying to figure things out. But again, the self-awareness part, I at some point I sat with Jeremy and I said, this is the part when I'm thriving, and this is the part that I'm really struggling. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with really trying and trying until you master something that you're not good at. If this is something that you feel passionate about, you want to do, and you just want to do it, you just enjoy doing it, even if you're not good at it, you know, practice make perfect, right? I'm fine with that. What I am not fine with is if what you're doing, it's making you feel miserable.
Yes.
You might be even good at it. And if you don't like it, you don't want to do it, then you need to find someone else to do it. Find ways to delegate that. And the best way to get to that point, to me, is with the self-awareness, is understanding that strength and that weakness and delegating your weaknesses to those who have a strength on that part and can make it faster and better and enjoy it while they do it.
Yeah. So have a support system, number one. Be self-aware, sort of look at your life and look at your support team and understand where your weaknesses are, where your strengths are.
And lean in through that self-awareness.
Yeah, and delegate, right? And do the things that you're good at and that you like, and find someone else to help you, both on both sides, professional side and the parenting side.
Yeah.
To be able to help you do the things that are not your strength.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that real estate saying of like, what's the most important scene? Location, 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 right? I have it for motherhood and architecture is delegate, because we do need to do that. We have to. There's no way we can do it this alone.
Yeah. Do you have a final step? Any final thoughts? On the next
I have
step.
Two, actually. I think one of the things that I learned, this is these two first steps, you know, growing your support system and leading through self-awareness are kind of like the main two ones. But then there's this part of that personal care and kind of like going inward in the process. I will say the third step is kind of organizing your chaos is how I call it. It's because I feel like sometimes we can take too much. Even if we're leading, we can start saying yes to too many things. I think that part of the organization becomes kind of like a way to find ways to structure yourself, to be realistic about the time you really have available, the time you can give. I am a strong advocate for mentorship and helping others. And I have my business, I have my baby, my family and all my commitments, and I still mentor. I still get time to still give out of the community, right? But that comes with a price of organizing myself and prioritizing what is really important. What are the things that, you know, anything that will affect my baby's schedule or like commitments I have with work, I try to shift a weight or play around with the time. And I think I talk a lot about that in the book on organizing chaos, because initially I wasn't doing that. I was all over the place. I was taking too much in. And it affected me. It affected my hormones. It affected my ability to even, we're trying for the second baby and it wasn't happening. And then it was something related with my hormones. And I got pregnant and I lost that first baby. And I got pregnant again and I lost. I have another loss. I have two losses in the process before this one actually stick around. And the main thing that changed in that process was me understanding that I wasn't being organized, that I wasn't really, you know, spending time for myself and understanding that I was still an individual that needed to be taken care of. And nobody can take care of myself but myself. And I was forgetting that besides being an architect and a mother, I'm a woman, a person with needs and feelings, individual things that I still wanted for myself that is not related to motherhood. It's not related to architecture. It's not related to being a leader and a mentor. It's Gloria Clutter. And I start being very, very strict with myself in certain scenes. And I share those tips in my book on how my daily routine looks like. One of the things that I learned the most in this, and this is a tip for any mother out there and even dads too, the main thing to me that have changed tremendously my schedule is being very respectful on the time I'm going down to bed, because most of the time we tend to work late. We like to do that when we're business owners. We like to do that. But I've learned that anything that I haven't done after a certain time of the day, it can totally wait. We always feel that anything needs to be done by yesterday. And I've learned that other people's urgency is not my urgency. It's not. And we put so much pressure on us that, you know, it needs to. And I just talk to people, you know, I was trying to do this and it's going to be done tomorrow. I said I was going to send it by 5, but I will send it tomorrow by 10. And we all will survive. And I try to dedicate time for myself at night. In the mornings, that part of going to sleep at a specific time and being respectful to that and not extending like I was doing when I was younger, which I will work all the way to like 2, 3 a.m. if I had to. And, you know, doing that Steve Madden in 2 weeks type of deal, it doesn't work anymore for me, right? So being respectful of when I'm going to bed so I can get up at a specific time in the mornings have made a huge difference, because there was a time when my chaos and my lack of organization was happening where I will wake up with Nova, with her screaming. And then I was already late because I had to just run to her and take care of her. There was no time for me. There was no time for anything else. There was no time for planning the date or getting ready for scenes. And I've learned that if I am able to wake up an hour or two before her and I get to do my devotional, read the Bible, you know, do some exercise, sit and talk, you know, read through my to-do list of what I need to do that day, take some tea or coffee, whatever it is, like whatever it is, it's time for me. And I get a shower and I get makeup and I do my hair and I feel pretty ready, you know. And then she wakes up and then, you know, breakfast is ready. And everything is good. But if I woke up with her because I went to sleep at 1 a.m., there's no way. It's already a cycle of being right. late and just so organizing that chaos is important. And I share a lot of tips on that and how to be productive, how procrastination affects you during the day, how avoid all those, you know, things. And I talk a lot about that. And the last one, because I told you I had two steps, yep. was I call it winning by grace. I think there's a tendency, especially in mothers, to be really hard. We are our biggest, you know, we criticize ourselves so hard. We tend to do a lot of comparison with others, trying to, sometimes we see others kind of being at this point in their careers and we feel like we're behind because of it. Sometimes we see other mothers with their kids being whatever they are and feeling like, oh, maybe ours is behind. Maybe where I would like to be in my career path will be here or finishing these exams already and I'm here. And I think it's a mental game. It's a constant mental game where you need to give yourself grace, because one of the things I repeat myself a lot in the book is your definition of success is unique. The definition of success by others is not what applies to you. My definition of success is my definition of success. And if I get to achieve that, it's what makes me feel happy. It's what makes me feel complete. There's a lot of people that can tell you in the process of everything you might be planning for yourself that you can. And I always said, you know, other people's limitations shouldn't limit you, because most of the people come from a place of their own first fears and their own limitations based on what they know and what they think they can do. That doesn't mean that it's your limitation, that is what you can or cannot do, you know. So I think being just graceful with yourself, understanding that your path is different, that if you decide that something that is acceptable for you is being able to spend time with your kid from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. when you start work, and then you get home around 4 or 5, and then from there, you close everything, and you're with your kid until 8 p.m. when you put it down. And those are the hours that you are comfortable with your kid. That is success to me. And if that is something that makes you feel that you are not giving enough, then find a way to say, you know what, I'm leaving work at 3. Can you give me these 2 hours? And when I put my kid down, I'm going to then work 2 hours after that. Make it work. Talk to people. And if people are not giving you the flexibility, either start a business or change practices. Find that support system, because your job and the firm you're working for is part of that support system. It's not just the daycare. It's not just the family that will take care of the baby, or whoever is helping you in your career path, mentors that you may have and all that kind of stuff. It's also whoever is your supervisor, your boss, your firm owner, is part of your support system. They need to support you. And if they don't, you need to find a place that will support you. So those are kind of my tips. If you read them, they form the word GLOW.
So that's where the architecture firm comes from.
Yes.
GLOW.
Yeah. So grow your support system, live through self-awareness, organize the chaos, and win by grace. It's GLOW.
Fantastic.
So people don't forget.
Such great advice, such wisdom. What a story from beginning to end. Thank you, Gloria. Thank you for coming by and sharing that story, sharing your wisdom with all of us. It is valuable and important, and so many suggestions on how we need to make decisions, right? It's something that we have to make a choice, right? We have to decide certain things for these things to happen. So thank you for coming by. I have about 2 minutes for a final question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
For tomorrow, I think this is a hard question, because I feel like it can be answered in so many ways, but I will think one thing we can do to make things better for the profession, I think, is getting more involved. I think more people need to get more involved with what's happening around us. Find that one thing that you feel you can make a difference. Sometimes that means understanding your own story and like your own struggles, because there's always going to be people that relate to that same path and same struggles, or similar at least, that you can be of service to them. I think that can make a huge difference, because the more people are more empathetic to others and what others are going through and how they can help. And that doesn't apply just to, you know, taking the exams, like in my case, and becoming a licensed architect. It's not just that. There's so much. There's housing issues and just, you know, since just so much in architecture that we can do as architects that we can influence on, you know, healthcare and how people live in their spaces and experience, and just kind of, I think, is that looking inwards and understanding that you, to me, it's like everybody's duty, my duty, to give some of my time. You can always give time, you can always give money, you can always give talent, right? But I feel that if you combine talent and time, at least if you can give money, combine those two to give away and find, you know, in those areas where you have some, going back to the self-awareness, some strength, you can make a difference in people's life, either through their career or through just personal one-on-one mentorship with others, whatever that means. I think that's kind of, sometimes we might not feel we're doing much because it might feel like we're kind of affecting one person at a time, but one person at a time can have such a, like a ripple effect in our career and our society just in general. So that's kind of maybe too general of an answer, but that's how.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think it's a great answer. Her name is Gloria Cloder. The book is The Architecture of Motherhood. We'll have a link to that book on the show notes. Her website for the architecture firm, glowarchitects.com. She's very active on Instagram at Gloria Cloder. Go check her out. Go say hi. Go say thank you. Gloria, thank you. Thank you for not only being here on the podcast, but all you do. You affect so many people. You are such a fantastic leader. You are an advocate for foreign architects, sharing what you know there. You're an advocate for motherhood and architects and other professionals. You are affecting so many people with the work that you do. So thank you for the impact that you're making in the world. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Mark.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, share a link with a friend. That's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Please share a rating, write a review, share a link to this episode with a friend. I'd appreciate it. Links to all our sponsors and all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode, found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. It's the network dedicated to architects, engineers, and construction pros. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at Gable Media at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Go check it out. We have, I think, 13 podcasts over there now. Gablemedia.com. And before we wrap up, a special thank you to our partners at Graphisoft for helping our community of architects make the transition to BIM with ArchiCAD software. Go now to graphisoft.com/US/EntreeArchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioning to help make your architecture firm a success. Visit graphisoft.com/US/EntreeArchitect to learn more. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and go share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And Brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but Brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with Brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.